there. That's there actually a little bit better. Yeah, okay. It is.
It's hard with the ambient because of the pass through.
Oh, I can hear the wind. It's harder for you to get that. Mm-hmm. Do you want to borrow mine to get Reed? You're good.
Okay. Yeah, you're touching these shits. Right.
No, come on. I'll trade.
I've murdered That's people fine. For less.
You sound good. My Sennheisers. You got fancy pants ones.
Oh, these.
These are
baller.
The Grado Labs.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Have you heard these yet? It sounds.
It's all good.
We'll give you a demo later.
I'm scared. I don't have the money to hear them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
I always worry when people are like, no, check this. I'm like, I like your Apple Watch, but it's a dangerous habit. Lambic is my habit.
It's a good habit to have.
That's my habit.
What are we drinking right now?
So you guys are drinking
a double, isn't it?
You guys are drinking the it's like 6%. It's the IPA and the IPL blended together, half and half. Ooh, so we call
that's
it the IPAL.
IPAL.
That's our India Pale Lager and India Pale Ale.
Ooh, I like IPAL.
I IPAL all the time. I'm IPALing right now.
You gotta like make a knockoff Apple label for that.
We just don't do that. That's like a major thing in brewing right now. Yeah. We don't do the like steal intellectual property thing. But if we were to, this would be the ideal concept for that. Yeah, I know.
Common Noodlin's already taken.
We've never
so.
Gotten a cease and desist. I kind of want one. I'm itching for one.
We'll help you with that today.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah. We're pretty good at getting in trouble.
Who are we talking about?
Hey everyone, we're sitting down here at Paradox Beer Company up in where are we, Josh?
We are in Divide, Colorado.
Divide? Where the hell is that?
That's what everybody asks me. Oh. I woke up this morning and here I am, like 2.5.
I always say Pikes Peak
from
beautiful
Denver.
Backside.
Ah, that is
looking at Pikes Peak's backside. Big beautiful backside.
Yeah. That girl's
grab
thick.
A piece.
See,
that girl
look
is
that.
Thick.
Mountain.
I'm saying widescreen lens.
Look at that. Yeah, actually, this is pretty exciting, right? This is a kickoff to a series we've been looking forward to for a couple of months now, and so we've asked Jeff Ehrman, who's joining us today from Paradox Beer Company.
That's me.
Where do I know that name from?
It's weird. Ehrman.
It's a rank in the Air Force.
Yeah. No, it's escaping. No, it
anybody
can't be
can
that.
Get it.
It can't be that.
Yeah. Like it's a bad guy in Mega Man.
It is
a boss you have to beat.
There's also a compressed air. Company
there
out
is.
There that
there
makes those.
That
yeah,
makes sense.
I've been meaning to talk to you about that one, Joshua. We got to get one. It's also the name of my imaginary HVAC company.
Ehrman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
and it was my nickname when I was in motocross.
Yeah. Wait, nice. You were in motocross?
No, I never was. Somebody asked me that one time. They're like,
"That's good."
That would
I believed
be awesome.
It
they
actually,
you,
which
was
good.
Where did that name come from? Were you like a motocross guy? And I was like, "Absolutely."
How did you know?
Let's go with that. That's like when you injure yourself in some embarrassing way, and then somebody gives you a much better injury.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, yeah, I'm going with that.
I invented
from
the
now
Superman.
On. It, yeah,
I exactly. fell from an airplane. That's exactly how this happened. You're right. Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're up here at Paradox. So, for those that have seen or heard, I guess you're hearing, not seeing the podcast. We've been hitting a lot of this how to make a great business conversation, and we want to get very industry specific on this one.
Well, and you know, when you think about Colorado, which is everything that we're about, beer comes to mind very quickly. And, you know, we're kind of the Napa Valley of beer in a lot of ways.
God, don't bring California into this.
Well, they're already here.
True.
So
I was going to say, let's not talk about where some of us were born.
Jeff, where were you born?
Hey, I'm not from Colorado either.
Evan
will not
native-ish.
Be happy with that one.
Wow, yeah. Exactly.
Native.
But there's a lot going on now. Right now. Yeah. I mean, hey, you know, happy decade. But, you know, the beer, the brewing industry in Colorado, and we've seen so many people go out and do so many interesting things. Talking to breweries and distilleries like we're going to be over the coming weeks is something that we felt was important. In part because of the value that it brings to Colorado and the economy and really the craft industry as a whole, but also because of some of the conversations that we've been having with friends and some of the reality of the economic changes that have been brought on to many of us. You know,
obligatory fuck you, coronavirus.
Fuck you, coronavirus.
God damn.
Come on, Jeff.
Yeah, it's been hellish.
Okay. All right. Well,
I don't want to fuck it.
you can tell it to go fuck itself.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah, you don't want to put your dick in COVID.
That's a new one.
I'm hitting that mature button today.
We did a lot of editing for this, so you know this is always beep, a fun beep, part. Beep, beep. But no, I mean a lot of people are looking at you know they're getting furloughed. They're seeing their businesses shut down, and they're beginning to turn to some of the ways that they can re-enter the world and re-enter the economy. And what's exciting about that, and anytime this happens, is you know, when people really choose to take on passion projects, and that's what so many of the breweries in the industry, a lot of the stories come from that. They come from the people that always had a passion for something that was culinary or craft or getting hammered with friends. I don't know any breweries that do that, but I hear it happens.
I've heard it's a thing.
I think it goes further though. I don't know if it's necessarily pet projects people are embracing as much as returning back to trade skills.
I would agree with that.
You think about it this way. I worked as a manager in a company for a long ass time, as an example, not me in particular. I got fired. I got laid off. I got a couple thousand in the bank. I can't find a job.
Yeah.
Right. No one is hiring the managers. No one's hiring the consultants. Well, my family's got to eat. I can't be on unemployment forever. You know, that ended July 1st with the additional COVID boost. What do I do? Well, I've got a couple grand. I used to know how to do this. I used to enjoy this. I know how to hang drywall. I know how to do, you know, these different trade skills.
Yeah.
They said, well, now's the perfect time to take a risk, because what's the worst that can happen? I end up bankrupt like everybody else. Like, why not do this?
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's why we want to have this conversation with people, especially in this industry where it doesn't really take... I mean, there's a lot of work to a brewery. Don't get me wrong, right? We're home brewers. We've been doing that for a while. Obviously, I think you might have brewed once or twice, Jeff.
I'm working on it.
Yeah. And honestly, it's a pretty straightforward business. I mean, you're always going to have some recipes. You're always going to have changes. But people are always going to want beer.
Yeah.
And when the economy is great, guess what? They're out on your patio. They're drinking your high-end, really expensive glasses of whatever it is you've made. And when they're not, guess what? They're still drinking goddamn beer. Right. It's how the Russians have controlled their economy forever, is they control the price of vodka.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, I mean, it's a pretty interesting space to be in. But when you're in a state like Colorado, where there's a brewery on every single damn corner of the state.
Now
how
things
do you
get
make
interesting.
That work,
yeah.
Right. How do you go from a home brewer to.
It becomes less and less about the beer. That's what's interesting. It becomes about your space and your views and the food trucks that show up and your staff and the music you play. And beer is now, what, 8% of the reason that you're successful? So that's really weird. As a brewer, you're like, no, beer is the king. It's the main thing. It's the number one reason people come to our brewery. Well, ask your patrons. What's the reason you come here? Well, it's on my dog walk path. You guys have good motorcycle parking. It's all these weird things that you wouldn't think of. And it's like, oh, it's not the beer? Well, that's the reason I go to a brewery. I go to a brewery because I want the beer. Well, you're a brewer. So come on. Other people go to breweries for other reasons. Exactly. They go to the brewery because they have the cool potato food truck that they love, or Trivia Tuesdays or whatever, that is nothing about beer. So so when you get into this business, you're like, oh man, we're gonna make the best beer and whatever. And you got to market that beer, you got to make sure that beer resonates with your populace, you got to do all these things to kind of, and that's just the beer. Everything else you got to do right, which is like 90 something percent of how to run a brewing business, is not really brewing beer.
Well, why don't we start with how you got into this industry? You give us the 411 on how you ended up here?
Sure. My background is in food, a lot of restaurant work, cooking and serving and bar work and things like that. So a lot of grinding and late hours and working with what are essentially criminals hiding out in the cooking industry.
I used to be in food service.
You know what I'm talking
about. You're not kidding.
Right.
You're not kidding.
So I wanted to get away from that. And I actually saw beer as a way to get away from that. It pulled on my culinary skills, my management skills, everything I had done in restaurants up until then. But I'm not doing short order things where I put stuff out where I'm compromising on it. It's things that I'm kind of selling my soul, was sort of the way I looked at it. Lying to customers, being a part of an organization I didn't believe in. Things like that, that kind of crush you and break you down. And you don't realize that in your like early 20s, but in your late 20s, when you're like all philosophical, you're like, man, what is this doing to me? What am I doing? So I wanted to find something where I could actually be honest and authentic. And that was important to me. And so getting away from the den of thieves of the restaurant industry was important to me.
And I love that you kind of made this parallel between food and beer. Because if you're not familiar with the home brewing or a brewing process, I mean, they are recipes. I mean, you're creating a liquid food.
It's soup. Right?
In a way. Yeah. In a way. Only a little more, I mean, it takes a little bit more chemistry, right? I mean, it takes a bit more on waiting times and you're dealing with live organisms. Whereas if you're in the food service and you're dropping a chicken fried steak in a Waffle House frying pan.
If you're in a Waffle House, you're probably dealing with living organisms, but also, yeah, I mean,
still don't regret what happened the night
terroir.
Before.
Yeah. I think it's going to call it the Waffle House terroir. Mm.
But I think it's a great comparison, right? You get a lot of recipes online. And when you start, everyone starts with a kit of some sort, generally, right? You go to your beer store, you know, someone that's done
the container
it.
Store.
Exactly, right? They have the little plastic keg to plastic brew everything barrel. In or the you know, 5 gallon buckets. And then you taste your own and it's never great on the first try. If you think it is, you're lying to yourself. It is awful, but it's drinkable. And that's where I think the hook catches you, right?
Oh yeah, you're done. if you run out and you want more, you're in for life.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So how did you end up at Paradox then?
So let's see. I'm trying to, how far back should I rewind? Let's go with our father bought a house in Lake George and wasn't going to be able to move out to it for at least a year at the time. It ended up being a couple of years. And during that time, I got a little bored and was doing some homebrewing with this guy and got a job working in a local restaurant there. There's a little cafe there in Lake George. And
is it still there?
I don't think it is. There was a cafe there in Lake George. I don't think it's there anymore. It's real small. And it was just, you know, short order stuff and just kind of to dip my foot back into that industry after moving out here. And I've heard about what was going on here at Paradox. And actually, they weren't here at the time, but heard about what was going on with Paradox, that they were getting things started, doing a barrel aging program and doing sours. And that was kind of where my interest lied most. And I went around and talked to a couple brewers around here. There was a brewer, and actually he's just now getting out of the industry down at Trinity Brewing in Colorado Springs, Jason Yester. He just sold his brewery recently.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. I'll tell you about that.
Yeah.
But anyway, went down and talked to him for a bit because I thought he was doing some interesting beers too. And went and talked to these guys as well at a couple events and realized that this was a good home for me. This was a place that they were excited about my creative energy and wanted to do some new and interesting experimental projects. And that was really a homebrew mentality here of let's just do what's fun and what we want to drink. And I said, yeah, that's me for sure.
Well, so it was really interesting, though, because I remember when you were at the old location.
Oh, yeah.
And it was kind of early on. The old location was, you know, it was near Woodland Park. Right. And so people would drive past. And what was always interesting to me was, you know, when Jeff would be behind the bar or something like that, you know, you were always really good at interacting with customers and telling the story. And what was interesting was how many customers were coming into Paradox, which was doing something that, as far as I know, was kind of the only beer company in the industry that was really doing what you guys were doing. And customers are coming in saying, so what do you have for fresh hop IPA? Where's the lagers? No, I don't really like lagers, but I'd love a Pilsner. Yep. You know, so that was kind of interesting, but
major educational hurdles in the early days for us. Absolutely.
You were across from a Jazzercise studio,
yep.
Which I felt like really added to the, you know, the feeling that I'm going to enjoy a high end, carefully designed
that's
beer.
That's Spike Seltzer territory at that point. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right? Did you ever get any, I guess White Claws weren't popular then, but I'm sure you got like Coors Light requests, right?
Absolutely.
Like, that was the joke that the whole brewing industry beat over with the dead horse. But
always
what was really cool, at least, you know, from an outsider's perspective, was to see the way that you guys adapted some of the things that you're doing in the business. And, you know, we're sitting outside of a much larger facility than you originally started out in. And I know there have been a lot of changes to your operations and everything else, but one of the things that I think at least Dad was scared about when you told him that you guys were moving up to Divide was how you would survive.
Yeah.
As were, I'm sure, every member of Paradox staff.
Definitely.
And you guys seem to be doing pretty damn well.
That's the thing is this company, the model, I guess that's been part of the educational process with this company is explaining the model to people. And they like to help us. You know, I think it comes from a good place. You were talking about this before. People would talk to me and what about this and what about that? And I think they're coming from a good place in that they want to help you be a successful business, right? So they're trying to offer you that information from their perspective. And you got to understand that it's an anecdotal perspective. And it doesn't really speak to your business model in that our business model was set up to be a worldwide business model. So that was our concept from the start was not how are we successful in Woodland Park or how are we successful in Divide or Teller County or Colorado State. It was never that. It was never about that. It was how do we make this a successful business on a world stage?
Well, and you guys are doing pretty well, right? I mean, I think for the benefit of the audience, hearing where you're distributed.
Okay, so pretty well in that our goal has always been to have a big voice in the beer industry. So we feel like the beer is a conversation. It's a 5,000-year-old conversation, older than that probably. And we want to be part of that conversation, but we want to be loud as possible in that conversation so that what we have to share and our perspective and our concepts and ideas are shared with as many people as possible so that they can grow on those ideas and that we can progress this. And the reason we want to be that way is because there's been so many people who've done that for us. So we're building on all these giants, all these industry leaders who know so much more and have so many more years experience than any of us do. But we can take what they've done and build on it with our knowledge and experience and pass that on by being as loud as possible. Now, to be as loud as possible is not to just sell to your local crowd. Yeah. Like, what influence does that have on the industry? Not much. And that's really not our goal, is to make money. If our goal was just to make money, then it wouldn't be... we wouldn't be making the beers we make.
That's true.
We're trying to make world-class beers. Beers that we feel can stand on the world stage and people can go, this is as good as or better than what I had from, you know, some other world-class brewery.
Well, what's cool for me is I'll talk to friends in Minnesota, where I moved from to come here in Colorado, or friends in California and, you know, New York, and my friends that are beer geeks, they know Paradox. And you know, it's kind of exciting to see that growth, thinking about, you know, making the decision, hey, you know, we're not beholden to our backyard, we're beholden to our product and the conversation that we can foster.
That. And that we wanted to pull beer in our direction. And we've actually seen it come. I mean, we've been doing this now for 8 years, so we've seen it come our way. We see brewers being more daring and experimental and all the things that we wanted beer to be. Throw style away. Maybe you can do more than, you know, I mean, that's how the painters got good. That's why art is interesting. That's why music is interesting, is because we create new genres. We push the boundaries. Why can't beer be that way? And so we had that same feeling, and any brewer that does that resonates with us right away. Yeah. And so they're part of that same conversation that we're trying to have. Is it upsetting the status quo and the old money and beer? Abso-fucking-lutely it is. It is. But we set out to be disruptive. So if we're not doing that, then we're not disruptive. And, you know, if we're not destroying the icons, then we can't be an iconoclast. And we want to destroy the icons. We need to destroy what beer is to make it something new and different.
So how do you balance between change for change's sake and then actually making a difference in the world? Where do you guys draw that line, and how do you make that determination of, hey, you know what, we're going to make a Fruity Pebbles beer, which I've had, by the way, not here, but I have had that in closer to Denver. And I went, why the hell would you make this? So just to say you can?
Yeah.
And I mean, as somebody who loves Fruity Pebbles.
Which I love,
I'll be
right?
For the name.
Honestly, that's my hope. My hope is that is an ingredient that resonates with that brewer. And
that is
coming from his heart and soul, that it's not a money grab. It's not a, you know, an intellectual property theft. None of those things. It's just he loves that ingredient and he wants to put it in a beer, or she. loves that ingredient, wants to put it in a beer, and they do. And that's great. Do I love that ingredient, want to put it in a beer? Nope. I'm not necessarily, you know, and that's the thing is I always push brewers and anyone in any art form to make sure that their perspective is present in everything that they release. So would my perspective be present in a Fruity Pebbles beer? Nope.
Well, maybe the good example is if you are a Food Network fan, I tend to be, I think all of us are foodies.
Everybody
if we're
at
here,
this table.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. We're
foodies. I'm so educated by the Food Network. No joke.
It shows.
And I love Guy Fieri so much.
It's the new PBS.
No joke.
Really. My girls, that's all they watch, right? We'll sit down for dinner. We'll eat dinner and they go, Daddy, can we please watch the Great Food Truck Race? And you're like, hell yes, we can. Yeah. And she'll be like, Daddy, I love Bobby Flay. And I'm like, God, I love you, child.
Yeah.
I love you.
They're going to be educated eaters. That's fantastic.
Yeah. And there's a benefit to it, right? Like my eldest wants to be a chef. So this is why I'm bringing up this example. So I'll be getting her first set of knives for her birthday. She's turning 8 in August.
Right?
Get her jacket. She's been cooking with me forever. I mean, she loves ramen. For her, she wants to do farm to table, which, you know, we use that kind of phrase all the time. But really what she wanted to do, coming from a 7-year-old, right, is, Daddy, I want the food to be the best it possibly can. And the only way that's possible is if it comes right from the farm. And I was like, oh, yeah, you're not hitting the tag phrase of a farm to table. No, you legitimately care about the ingredients and what's going in and about people's health and antioxidants. I mean, we had a conversation about antioxidants this week, right? About what's in food and the colors and why that matters. And so when I look at kind of those Food Network side of things, you get a lot of chefs that say they're pushing the envelope. Okay, cool. You stuffed some crazy combination that doesn't really work. Great, I'm glad you tried it. And then you get some of the higher-end Michelin style, right, that have their own dedicated penthouse food labs in Manhattan who are doing all kinds of crazy stuff with dry ice just because they can, right? Not really necessarily to explore, but to just make a name for themselves. And so if we're talking about what makes people and businesses great, where do we differentiate there? Right? Is it more that it's a customer focus? Is that you're trying to push your industry and hold other chefs or brewers accountable? Is it like, how do we describe that as we're sitting here?
Okay. So great. I love this question, honestly. And it's about two things. So yeah, you do have to consider the customer. Absolutely. And that's where the balance comes in. But honestly, a big part of it, and these guys would agree with me, is you have to keep your creators, your staff, you know, in this case, our brewing staff, of course, they have to stay engaged and motivated and interested. And I'll tell you that the guys that I know that show up and girls that I know that show up and lift the clipboard and go, oh God, that beer again. Seriously, it's a problem. And they get disengaged and they become jaded and their effort reduces and the quality of work reduces. And so if you build in from the beginning of your business, if you build in a model that engages both the customer because of serial nature and the creator because of its serial nature and the challenges that that already creates, it's a smart model. Trust me. That's why we have the same staff that we've always had. We have the same brewing staff that we have from day one because all our brewers are into every single beer. Every single beer is different. You know, even when we approach like, oh, let's do another salted watermelon beer. It's going to be a different watermelon, a different salt, a different barrel that we age it in. Nothing will be the same. Let's adjust that recipe.
That's part of the thing with Paradox,
right? Did you guys
right?
like the recipe last time? I felt like it was a little too thin. Let's up that body a little bit. Should we increase the boil or should we increase the sugar? Like, what do we, yeah. So like, there's never satisfaction. And it's the, you know, is there a perfect beer? No. Is there a perfect pizza? No. You know, but can we work to maybe try to get as close, you know, fractionally closer to that perfection? Why not? It's super fun.
And what's awesome about what you said is it really hits one of the taglines we keep bringing up. And that's that pursuit of excellence. Is it's not necessarily, hey, we got it right. Now we're going to bottle it. We're the new Coors Light or the, you know, whoever it is, the new, you know, God damn, how did I just forget them up in Fort Collins? They make
Odell.
Fat Tire.
New Belgium. New Belgium. Yeah.
I mean, or you're the new Belgium or whatever the case is. It's about just that pursuit, right? It's the artistry behind it.
And really in today's market, like bringing the customer in on that journey of here's my pursuit. You want to come with me on this?
That's neat.
They want to support you. They want you to continue. Yeah, you know, this one was an 8 out of 10. maybe the next one's a 9 out of 10. Let me help you get there. And the when you bring them along on that journey, you've got this whole mob with you. And honestly, we've got a bit of that going on, and it's a bit of a worldwide, like, come on, Paradox. Let's get weird.
You guys seem to have a little bit more loyalty than a lot of the other breweries out there.
I don't know. I hope that's about quality. I don't know.
Yeah.
I was going to say, one of the driving points for that I've seen success, especially in the microbrew space, is the community. If you don't have that community backing, I don't care how good your goddamn beer is. It doesn't matter. If you don't have the community that's willing to come in, taste it, provide feedback, I mean, you can bottle it all day long. No one's going to drink that shit.
And I guess I would say that our community building is about respect. We come from a place of the company was built on the idea of, we believe that the buyer is becoming more and more educated. The buyer is becoming more and more interested in variety. The buyer knows more now and wants more now, has higher expectations now. So that's what we built this company on. And so that's just respect. That's respect based. I respect you as a consumer. Not that I'm Mr. Knowledgeable Brewer and I will tell you what to drink. You know, that's not where we come from. We come from the fact that I, as a buyer, go into a liquor store with, you know, I'm going to spend $30. I don't know what I'm going to buy. I feel like I might get something sour and I might get something hoppy and I don't know, but my mind is open. Whereas rewind 20 years and the consumer knows exactly what they're going to spend their money on. They know the brand they're going to buy. And if they're out of that brand, they know the default. It's a different consumer now. So knowing that the market changed, and we saw that market change, that consumer change, we wanted to build our company based around that consumer. And it really comes from a point of, look, consumer, we respect your curiosity. We have a similar curiosity. Let's push that together. Do you want to be part of our trip? And so that's really where we came from initially.
Has that bitten you guys in the ass since, January 2020?
Somewhat, in that, you know, people tend to go back to a reliability thing a little bit, you know, as the market has changed. But we see that shift already happening again, as since we're world market, which is nice. Things are opening back up for us, and we're sending stuff back out, including kegs again, because things are being served on tap in the world market.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not in where America.
Yeah. Let me translate. Non-US.
Non-US
markets. Yeah. So it's good that we've diversified in that way. But yeah, that's who's looking for our new releases right now, are the markets that are open.
So, you know, I think this is, this is really, really cool to hear about from your perspective, just the way that you've held true to the story and maintaining the authenticity of who Paradox is. As we're talking about this, I just remembered a change to your product a little bit earlier on around the bottle sizes. Mm-hmm. That you were selling.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason I bring this up is I think there's some commonality in our experience as Wevio with your experience as Paradox, where you know, at Paradox, you really are, in a lot of ways, what I would classify as a boutique brewer, meaning you're not providing a commodity product. You're providing something that's truly crafted and toiled over and designed to deliver an experience, a meaningful, impactful, positive experience. And with those intentions, there's a shift in the price point of what you're delivering. And definitely. So I know early on, you know, Paradox bottles from my memory were generally larger format, and with that, a larger price tag. And if you go to the store now, you guys are in, what is it, like 500 ml bottles?
If you find our bottles, we're mostly in cans now. That's the thing, is we've now shifted to 16-ounce and 19.2-ounce cans.
Okay.
Because the market doesn't want bottles anymore, and it is a price point issue. It really is. It's getting smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And we don't really sell, you know, any of the stuff we put into cans. We're not going to really, like, spend the time or effort that we would on maybe a bottled product. And anything we bottle anymore is hand-sold here at the brewery.
Okay. So
because the market doesn't want it anymore.
That intrigues me, though, because when you go to a liquor store and you go to find a new bomber, right? You're going in there, new brown bottle, new label, I'm going to try some new stuff. Yeah. When I see that comparison to a can, I see a can as being kind of the generic, non-experience. I'm here just to get the ABV. Yeah. Right. But in the bottle, it's an experience. I'm pouring it into a glass. I'm seeing how it's carbonated. I'm seeing, you know, how had the clarity on it. I'm seeing all of these things. And price wise, I mean, we can't be talking more than 50 cents difference per serving, right? Between the glass and the aluminum.
No, huge, huge price difference. So per can, you're looking at maybe $4 to $6, depending on the can. Bottle could be anywhere from 9 to 16.
It is considerable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not the same beer. And that's the thing. So anything we put different in bottle, like I said, we're going to sell it here now. We used to distribute it. We don't anymore.
Oh, you don't?
The market doesn't hold it anymore.
Okay.
That's the thing, is most of the liquor stores have closed out their bomber section. More and more are closing them completely.
They seem to be getting smaller.
All coolers are like, we added a new cooler, and it's all cans now.
Well, let's be honest, $9 for a beer. Yeah, it'll last you all night. You can sit there on your porch with a cigar or whatever the case is. I mean, for us, it's probably like 9 of those a night.
Yeah,
but for the average person, right? You're like, you know, 8% or above. You know, you've got a really good experience and really good taste. But even at $9 for a bottle of beer, it just doesn't seem economical to the average person, right?
Understandable. And really, that was the idea of the beer, was to be, you know, you picked up a 6-pack of your standard, you got a 4-pack of your hazy that you wanted, and then you bought a single bottle of Paradox. That was always the idea, was for it to be something boutique and special. And those were the older, longer barrel aged, more blending stuff that we did. And we're still going to do that. And we still do that. We've just reduced the production on that. And that stuff's all sold here. To meet the market needs, and again, to follow that consumer, which is really, that's, since we set out to do that from the beginning, we can't just like stick to that original, like, no, we knew that consumer in 2012. That consumer is not the same person anymore. They don't spend their money in the liquor store the same way anymore. So we have to be the 2020 version of the brewery that respects the consumer. And so to do that, we have to create canned beers, and if they do want that specialty beer, that bottle beer, they need to come see us here at the brewery. So that's kind of what we've shifted to as a model, and it works for most people because we do online sales for some of those beers as well. That also speaks to that same consumer. I mean, I think you guys know what age this consumer is that has the
12 to 14.
Well, yeah. Expendable income. Nothing else to do but buy the new beer releases, follows everything online. Like, we know this person, and so to properly make our product speak to them, we want to make sure that we're kind of offering that spectrum for that consumer. So it's one of those things where, as a small company, one of our powers is agility. And we have a lot of it. We could change tomorrow, like whatever we make. Okay, now let's make this. We've got some really, really experienced brewers behind my back here that are the owners of this company, and they could make anything. They have tons of experience in technical German brewing and old school like American ale brewing and things like that, that most people don't. So we could shift gears and do something. And that's part of why, you know, we're a viable company right now. Whereas some companies you see going away, they have no agility. They're like, no, we make the same 6 beers forever, and if you don't like them, rawr. It's like, all right, well, good luck with that. Right? See you later. What was your company called again? I'm sorry.
Well, that's why you have so many of the larger brewers that are on the kick of buying microbreweries. Right? Coors is a great example.
It's that whole, again, to food, I always look at, like, what if you're a restaurant that's like, no, we're serving the same shit we served in 92. It's like, nah, 92 ain't hacking it anymore. You can't put parsley on my plate, bro.
But you can damn well keep that grilled cheese on the kids' menu all the time.
Well, sure, yeah, that's eternal.
Yeah, that's,
right?
Maybe the cheese gets a little better over time. Right? Just
there you go. But that's kind of the thing, is like, as a business that looks to be viable for, you know, long term, here we are coming up on almost our 9th year of doing this. We want to make sure that we stay abreast of the market, and that we're speaking to that consumer, and that we're not tone deaf, because that's who we see failing. Every time I see a brewery announce that they are failing, I'm like, tone deaf, tone deaf. They were not paying attention to where the market was going, or they became like somehow jaded and became like some sort of like pushback thing. Like, you guys are wrong, you know, and we're not doing that, because I hate to say anyone's wrong in their like assessment of anything. You know, right. I have my assessment of beer and what good beer is, but who am I to say that you're wrong based on your knowledge and experience, or you're wrong based on your knowledge and experience? We don't have that kind of a ego, I guess. And I think that's sometimes what you have to put aside to be a company that stays on the pulse, and that's something that's super important to us.
All right, so
welcome back, right?
Yeah, welcome back from the break. We're still here with these
we
two.
We needed it, and we have fresh beers now, so we're good.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the company has not improved.
It's still the same three fools on a sunny Tuesday afternoon.
Oh, it's beautiful. A little bit of rain on the horizon, but with this view, it'd soak me all day long. Write me down. Write that down.
Soak me all day long.
Soak me all day long.
Hashtag soak me daddy. Oh, it's already trending. Look at that.
That was quick.
Are we live?
No one told me we were live.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't mention that part?
Yeah. We're doing that live.
So we come back from the break, and we've had some conversations about, I believe what we really want to talk about the second half is really the foundation of Paradox, what makes you guys successful, right? We talked about agility, the ability to adjust to market demands. We've talked about knowing your customer base and providing what they need, right? User experience and user testing. Yeah. We've talked about the creative nature. If you can't be innovative, you really have no place on the list of great businesses. Yet you might pay the bills, but that's pretty much all you're going to do. Right. And so we had a couple of questions for you on some of the things you guys have done in Paradox to keep that agile nature. Right. So if I'm not mistaken, you guys were about to open another location.
We were.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess
it was in old Colorado City. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when things changed due to the pandemic and some of the regulations came out, we started to reevaluate what that space could do for us. So, you know, you look at the business plan and how many people could sit in there and the hours were going to be open, and you start building calculations based on that of, okay, what could this possibly make if it were really killing it? And what could it possibly make if it were sleeping? You know, what would it be? So we had to kind of go back and revisit those calculations because they didn't make sense anymore. We can't seat that many people in this space anymore. And that space that we had originally agreed to had no outdoor seating at all, which is obviously super scary in our current environment. So going back to that and explaining that to the landlord, he was super cool about it. He understood. And we kind of, since we had friends who were interested in the space, we kind of passed him off to them and sort of transitioned that to where it wouldn't be too painful for anybody. But we can't really make that work anymore in the original design. Now, does that mean we don't want to have a space down in Colorado Springs? No, it doesn't. We do, definitely. And we're still looking at spots down there to do something. It will not be at all what we had originally imagined. I feel like we're in a whole new world now. And that's, yeah. You know, touches on the agility thing again. You know, if we were tone deaf to that and just said, no, we're doing that and rawr, we don't care, and just kind of bullied that forward, we'd be stuck. And we're not trying to do that to this company. We're not huge. So we got to make smart moves and protect our people. And so one of them was to pull out of that and reimagine what our space in an urban environment will be. Maybe it won't be Colorado Springs. Maybe it'll be somewhere else. But what are our sales situation would be and how to make it a viable business opportunity, because that one's not anymore.
What place does pride have in your business? So I think about this, right? Being a business owner and thinking about, you know, I really wanted to be double the size I am now. I really wanted to have my own facilities. I can't do it. You know, give the middle finger to COVID. But honestly, that's a huge, huge stab to the old pride.
It is.
Yeah. Right? I mean, you've been working your ass off for 8 years. You thought at this point you were finally going to get into a point where you can get ahead. Now you've got more production, so therefore maybe more revenue, and then you can actually start getting into that scene you're looking for. I mean, what place does pride have in business, and in particular here?
So there's a hit there, for sure. What's powerful about this company is we can kind of take it to the back room and joke about it and stab each other with it a little bit. it doesn't play into the ultimate decision, because that's obviously a folly. So when we start talking about, well, what do we do numbers wise, it's going to be logic. That's partly why I'm here at Paradox, because that resonates with me again, is that we don't play on hubris and pride and ego and those things in order to force ourselves onto people. there's a bit of humility and compassion there. And I think that's important too. So that we're not, again, losing that customer by speaking to someone else than who we're trying to speak to. So it really is about messaging for us. And even in the pullback, we were careful to say, hey, no disrespect to that neighborhood. God, we were so bummed we couldn't be there. We love you guys. We're still going to kind of follow through with some collaborations we had planned because we wanted to ingratiate ourselves into that neighborhood. We had planned some collaborations. We're going to follow through with those. you know, you do it in the best way possible, both to save company face a little bit, but also to not disrespect the customer. You know, you hate to, there are all these people that were like, oh God, we're so excited and you're in our neighborhood and that's walking distance from our house. And look, I understand your disappointment. We are super fucking disappointed about not opening there too. So you want to make sure that you put that in the sentiment that it's like, I feel you. I feel your disappointment. We have it too. And it's not necessarily about, cutting this off permanently. It's more about reevaluating, stepping back and going, okay, what's the best move for us so that we can be there for you a decade from now, so that we can be there for you 2 decades from now. Long game versus short game. And actually that's something we say to our customers quite a bit, is that, you know, our concept here is not about like how we can cash in, how we can trade in on your hype or your excitement and how we can make money off of that. It's more about how we can provide something for you that is long-term, sustainable, long money. You know, it's the long con. Fuck yeah.
True. I've got one more not fun question and then I'll shut up so Josh can do this. What's more important to you and to this brewery? Your employees or your customers?
Oh, that's tough.
And why? That's tough. I just want to get, so get inside your head, right?
We're such a small team. So if you look back to the early days of Paradox, there were four people, Carol in sales, Jeff and Brian, who are brother-in-laws. They're inside right now. This is their third brewery. They started this. And then myself. And that's really the whole company. Everything else has changed around that nucleus many, many, many times in the last 8 years. So to say that like those four people aren't important to me is a little silly, because that's the seed of who Paradox is. But I've seen a lot of change happen in all that time. Again, with the customers too, they are changing constantly too. Not only is the demo changing of who they are, but what they spend and how they spend and all that is just, it's a constantly moving target. So what I'd say is that culture is most important because it speaks to both proper employee acquisition and proper customer acquisition. If your culture rings true and is properly held through all your customer and employee base, all your branding, all your messaging, all your social network, then I feel like you're setting that filter properly so that you're going to build a strong customer base, not a fickle, you know, a customer base that doesn't believe in what you're about, because you've put that message out there. You've made it evident instead of making it vague and letting them sort of create that concept for themselves. And then again, with the employees, same thing. An employee that's here and the whole concept of constant change resonates with them, they're going to stay. And we've had some 5-year, 6-year, we've had some people stick around for a while. The employee that comes here and right away pushes against constant change, I already know it's going to be a problem. I know right away. Yeah. They're like, but last week, and I'm like, ha ha, last week. You're funny. Yeah, it's going to change all the fucking time. And if you're not ready for that, then it's going to be an issue for you. And so, again, that's about proper messaging. So we want to make sure we message ourselves proper to both. Gosh, which one's more important? I guess I'll say employee. It's slightly more important, because your employee has their hands on your product, whether it's that interaction to the customer or something in the packaging process or something in the manufacturing process, that employee has a hand on your product. So I'm kind of hippie about this, but their spirit and their energy is a part of it. And so you really want to keep that clean and pure and authentic. And so that's difficult to do if you don't have control of your employee base.
So I don't know if this is something that you can get into a whole lot or not, but part of what I'd be interested in hearing is, it sounds like you've done such a great job of preserving the culture that is Paradox and maintaining that over time.
It's my main job. I'm not kidding. That is my number one job. People don't know what my job is here. They don't. They're like, you're a brewer there, but you serve, but you manage, but you order,
and,
but you...
And I neglected to even list your job title.
Culture. Which is awesome because that's another word for like yeast and microbes and shit too, which is like,
is your job
yes.
title, what, your job title is what now?
No, I don't know what my job title is. I don't have one.
Exactly.
Like I said, there's four of us.
Exactly.
I say brewer blender, but God, that doesn't even touch on it.
I tell people you're the head brewer. I hope I'm not getting you in trouble.
It's not really true though. We don't do that.
We're in your head.
There you go.
Yeah, exactly. See? No, but what I was curious about was how, I mean, just factorially speaking, from year one to today, what kind of growth have you seen at Paradox? Are we talking, you know, you've doubled in production capacity? I know footprint isn't so much it.
It's been a major ride. We're definitely not producing on the quantities we were, but we're also producing different beers.
Sure.
We're producing more varieties of beers now. So it's all kind of changed. When we were doing mobile canning and when we were working with other packaging methods, there would be minimums on what would make sense for a batch. So it's like, look, if we don't produce up to that amount, then there's really no point to doing this beer or whatever. That kind of game has changed. Technology has changed that. Label printing, can printing, there's some things that have changed what a viable batch is. And so because of that, again, to be agile, we've changed our batch size. So our batches are smaller now than they ever were, but we're making more beers. So
batches are smaller,
yep,
but you're making more beers.
Yep.
How has that not driven up your costs overall?
It only works because, like I said, technology has changed on printing.
Okay.
And so our packaging costs have gone way down. I would say about half what they used to be. We also bought our own canner, which means we're doing in-house instead of mobile canning, which is another major cost for us. When we were doing mobile packaging, we'd have a company show up with their people and their equipment and they charge a per can price. Yeah. And so now with our people in-house, we're able to do things a little more modular, a little cheaper, and a little smaller batch. So,
yeah, that's not something you could have done 5 years ago.
Nope.
Not just technology, but expense-wise. Just, so yeah, I'm thinking of the listeners that, you know, want to start up their own brewing thing. They want to go big or go home. They like to go to auctions and buy all of the, you know, the gone out of business brewery kit.
US made steel gear, baby. You know,
this is a 400 barrel batch. We're gonna throw this in here and we're gonna make a difference in the world. And then the next thing you know, a month later, they're out of cash because they don't have anything to sell.
Yeah.
It's still sitting. I visited a place that wanted to expand. I'll leave the brewery's name out of this. A fairly well-known brewery that was looking at expanding as well had bought all of the machines for their own canning process. I mean, it looked like a Coors factory and their small microbrewery. And when I asked them, you know, how many of these are you selling? And they go, well, it hasn't really picked up yet. So how much is the equipment? I said, well, you know, we got it used. We got a really good price. I'm like, okay. Don't tell me, or you can. I'm just curious here. And he's like, yeah, we spent, you know, this dollar figure. And I went, holy shit. Like, that was the cost of your entire brewery setup to buy a new canning facility, and you don't have a customer base yet. So, I mean, when it comes to breweries, I mean, I think one of the things that's really, really important is the phased approach of take your time.
That's something we haven't talked about.
Yeah.
Is funding. We're 100% organic growth funding. So in that, I mean, all our funding is from our sales. So we don't owe anybody anything. So that's why we're able to do what we want to do. And part of that is that if we want to do a new project, we make a beer to kind of create the money for that project.
Smart. So, yeah, that's really smart.
So for instance, we have a spontaneous project here where we do beers that we don't pitch any yeast into. They cool naturally overnight in our cool ship. And, you know, that was sort of just a brewer's passion, fun project that we knew wouldn't create a bunch of beer, wouldn't really make much money, but it was something we really wanted to do. It was also sort of a microbial collection thing that we've used for some of our other beers. We've gotten some good yeast and bacteria out of that. But, That program probably will pay for itself in a few years, you know? And you hate to push that to an investor. Like, I hate to say that to anybody that's throwing $50,000 at our company. Like, yeah, so you're not going to see any of this for a while.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it's also about us, again, staying engaged, interested, experimental, and
bringing customers along on that ride. So do customers want to be brought along on the, you know, spontaneous? Yeah, they do. They want to watch a cool ship get filled and cooled and, you know, follow those beers and then buy them for way too much money. It's a good time.
We got some business.
We got some business.
Running hot.
All right. So we've talked a bit about business. Yawn. Can we talk about beer for a minute? Is that cool?
Ooh, beer.
Hey.
Yeah. So
that's not business, is it?
Yeah, I don't know.
Wait a minute.
So I want to start with the hop story. I think this is, you know, why hops were used, the history of beer, the IPA, for instance. So one of the things that bothered the shit out of me coming to Colorado is when I first moved here, what, 6 years ago or so, oh my God, everyone on their menu was nothing but IPA, 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 double IPA, triple milkshake, IPA. Triple. I'm like, God, super thick, damn, chew it guys, IPA. Like, yeah. You're just hopping the shit out of my mouth to say, yeah, look at me, I can tolerate this. I'm like, yeah, if I wanted to do that, I'd take a bottle of peroxide and I'd chug the shit, right? But
or a can of Petty Topper.
Yeah, Yeah. And that's not to say there aren't some delicious, like this IPA I'm drinking right now, mm-hmm. Hot damn. Damn good, right? But I feel like it was the, what did they call it? The IPA is the 20-year-old white man's version of the pumpkin spice latte.
Basic.
Right? The same thing?
Yeah. But, it became a competition and that's the problem.
It's it became the competition.
Instead of it being about, oh, who can make the best flavored thing? It's like, let's make it the most, oh, this or that or bitter or whatever.
Something, and, right?
Some things went wrong there.
Yeah, and the taste is really unique for an IPA, right? So you get that kind of, I don't know, almost medicinal taste in a lot of the hops. And of course, you're going to have very different hops that have different flavorings. But what I found interesting was the story of how the IPA got started. You guys know how that actually got that, how it got like its name and how it worked? Yeah, like the original IPA.
I've heard it, and then I've heard it debunked, so I don't know.
Oh, it got debunked. Yeah. The one about we're shipping it to India and we want it to taste the same.
I heard that's not true, but whatever.
What? It's not?
Yeah, no, regardless of where the location was, it was, it frankly was used in the British Navy of transporting beer. And when you gyrate beer that isn't heavy, so you expose it to the sun, you expose it to salt water, you expose it to all of these elements and barrels, you shake the shit out of it because the ship doesn't stop moving. What happens to your typical beer?
Oxidized.
Right? You can't drink it. So what they found was the introduction of the hop provided those kind of medicinal properties that killed the bacteria, kept it all out, and preserved the beer. So you're actually able to drink while you were going across into the Caribbean, or, you know, you've got some of those stories on port and all of that. But I did not really appreciate hops until I heard that story. And then I finally started drinking. I'm like, oh, okay. So hops did save the world. I like this.
If you age it out 6 or 12 months, you barely even taste them.
Yeah. We were talking about that a few minutes ago, right, Jeff, of something you guys are doing here that's a little different with hops.
For some beers, you want to actually age the hops, which seems a little anti what you'd want to do for freshness of hop flavor. But for some beers, you want to reduce their antimicrobial capabilities. So in order to do that, you age them out a little ways, and then they don't kill the bacteria that you want to have there. So we do that a little bit here. I've got some hops aging. They end up smelling like Parmesan quite a bit when you do that.
Huh.
And you want to age them past that point. So when they stop smelling like Parmesan, that's when you can use them in the beer.
So what happens if you do use them? I mean, will that taste
it
translate?
It will make the beer taste cheesy. And I've had some very, very cheesy beers. It can also be in spontaneous fermentation. Those flavors can be an occurrence anyway. So between them occurring through fermentation and using cheesy hops, then it's not a good idea. And I don't think anyone wants to drink that really.
Yeah, I don't
it
think
sounds
so.
Like one of those dare beers. Like, hey man, you want to try this bomber with me? It tastes like cheese. Yeah. No.
If it's lightly there, it can add a note of interest. But if it's the overwhelming flavor, not good. And so, we try to avoid that by aging things out properly. So,
well, I was thinking back to the very first batch of beer that you and I brewed, Jeff.
Yes,
and that was an IPA. And,
awesome.
And it was super good. And we went back and forth on the recipe and you had started at Paradox around that time.
Yep.
And I think I remember like the first time I came in, I was thinking like, I'm going to get an IPA when I get in there. And I look up at the menu and it's barrel aged. There's not a single IPA here. And, And I think it was a couple months later that I was out visiting, and all of a sudden you guys had some fresh beers that weren't barrel aged, right? So, all of a sudden enter like IPA. I don't know if that was one of your first fresh ones or not, but that was kind of a cool thing. And I mean, we're drinking IPAs right now. Well, IPALs, which whose gift to the world is that?
That needs to be a thing.
Yeah, it really does. I'll let you explain what the IPAL is.
It's an India pale ale and an India pale lager blended half and half. So one of them's a lager, one of them's an ale, and they kind of balance each other. It's kind of nice.
So yeah. Pretty solid.
Yeah.
Pretty solid.
I mean, it's phenomenal, especially because I know, Joshua, you're not always going for the IPAs. You generally go for like the darker beers.
Oh, stout. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Room temp stout. Yeah.
But this one's okay.
Nice.
No, this is delicious. And what I find interesting is the way you mentioned something about kind of the old European way of doing things and the brewers that you have here that are doing that. And again, I don't think it's reviewing history for reviewing sake. I think it's more of, listen, this has been going on for at least 5,000 years. Yep. Surely someone is smarter than me that has done this before or has tried it. What can we learn from it?
Yeah.
And so what I appreciate about the stouts in particular, and I'm not sure if you guys do too many here, I see a lot of really inventive taste, but it seems like you're using more of an older style of brewing, right? I mean, it's not the, when you're doing sours, I mean, you're not kettle souring, are you? I mean, are you fully? Yeah. I mean, you look at most sours on the market. Yeah. You look at most sours on the market, you taste it and you go, okay, they have a cucumber, a strawberry, and a rhubarb or something. You taste every single one. The base is exactly the same. The pH is exactly the same. It tastes like a prescripted, I don't know, can of acid, so right? It's citric.
That's kind of what brewing has become. It's splintered off. It has such a storied history of interest and everything. It's really splintered off since Germany created the Reinheitsgebot, which is a list of rules for beer. It's kind of gone that direction in general worldwide. And that's, to us, unfortunate. We'd like to see it stay more interesting and more wide open. And in that, we mean that beer, you know, a lot of people are really big fans of clean beer and that it's supposed to be sort of one flavor or two flavors. We love making beers that are maybe 12 to 16 flavors and kind of creating closer to what wine does. A lot of wines have 50 plus phenols going on in them, so they're super complex and intense. And we think beer can kind of rock in that similar category. But when you hold it back and you use a lab yeast and you don't add any bacteria and you limit your malts and you do certain things to kind of make it very straightforward because you're trying to ring that one note, sometimes you miss the opportunity to make it an interesting, complex beer. And we're against that, so much so that, you know, we'll pretty much be inspired to make a beer and go, okay, now how do we do this in our way, in the Paradox way, that makes sure that it has that range of flavor and complexity and all those things. So it's always got to have a wrinkle or we're not going to be happy with it, or else it doesn't really represent who we are and what we do.
And as, you know, that business-minded person, I think, okay, great, you have a recipe. Now how repeatable is it? But that's not the purpose of this, right?
It really isn't. We revisit recipe concepts and go, what's the improvement this time? You know, what's the step that we want to take in a different direction this time that makes it not the same beer it was last time? Because are we the same people we were last time we made this beer 2 years ago? Gosh, we're not. I've been through some shit since then, you know? The world's not the same. I'm not the same. I like different things now. Should I make a repeatable beer again? No. So it's more about like connecting our humanity to the product. And I think if you try to do duplication, our newest beer that we're working on right now that we're talking about earlier is called deduplication. And that's actually exactly what it's about, is how do we separate our desire to make something successful from our desire to make something that represents us. So how do we make sure that both of those things happen at the same time without letting one of them bleed into the other? So what we've done with that beer is we've really controlled the process side of it is very much us. The ingredient side is what we're kind of giving away. That's sort of what we're, okay, we'll accept that this is the palette we're working with. We'll accept that these are the colors we're painting with today, but we're going to control our brush strokes and our brush selection and our, you know, everything else that we can possibly control, the lighting in the room. I mean, what else can you control? Like, that's the main thing about brewing, is it's so many damn variables that it's so exciting. If you don't embrace the variables that are available to you, you just shut all them off and go, okay, we're going to just do the regular, the regular, the regular, the regular. We don't do that. Like, the idea here is, what's the water structure on this? How do we salt that water to make it exactly the structure we want it? What's the hop bill on this? Are we using just pellets, or are we maybe going to use some lupulin powder, maybe just some terpenes? Maybe we'll use some terpenes on this one. You know, it's like thinking about each ingredient and how that's a different variable in the beer. And I think that's really how we don't make the same beer twice, is we go back and go, we're not doing exactly that again. That was 62 variables that we chose on. Are we going to choose those same 62 variables again? Fuck no.
Right. Yeah.
Are you the same person that chose the same outfit? You know, it's like, no. So we want to be human as possible and make sure that, you know, we choose those variables differently because we're different and you're different.
And I think that's the beauty of it, right? Is you're not opening a box of Kraft mac and cheese, dumping it in, pushing the timer for exactly 7 minutes, dumping in your powder and your milk and saying, okay, I got what I always got. You're appreciating those differences.
How are you viable now?
Mm.
You know, that's our main thing, is like viability, being part of the conversation, being not being left behind, you know? And I think if the people who don't change and don't accept change are the people who get left behind. So it's a big part of who we are.
Wow. What a great note to end on. Yeah. Thanks, Jeff.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, I just want to say thanks again, Jeff, for sitting down with us, and, you know, really to Paradox Beer Company for sharing your story. There's a lot to be said for the way that Paradox has set themselves apart in the market. And, you know, we appreciate you as the listener for joining us on this journey today.
And now, more importantly, because I know everyone is waiting for this, Josh.
You think so?
I'm waiting for it. So, is that giveaway?
Yeah.
You know,
we've
been advertising. Yeah. On Instagram about, so I don't know if we can give beer away. But
empty,
we've got glasses
containers
with containers of
that
things.
Yeah.
So here's how it's going to work, right? Is we're meeting these fantastic brewers. We know you want to taste their stuff. We know you want some glasses, and we know you want to brag to your friends. So here's what you have to do in order to enter.
Be sure to follow us on Twitter. That's the important first step.
Oh yeah. Step number one. Number two is you have to subscribe to our podcast. If you don't subscribe to our podcast, sorry, you're not included in this giveaway. And then number three is Instagram.
Yeah. So we're asking folks to find us on Instagram, follow us, but also use hashtag Team Unicorn. So that's hashtag Team Unicorn and hashtag Wevio. That's obviously spelled just like it sounds. Vigeo.
Anyway, guys, we want to say, if you want to be in this this giveaway, here are the couple of steps you got to do. You have to subscribe to our iTunes podcast. If you don't have an iPhone, that's okay. You can subscribe to one of those other podcast platforms. We will try not to judge you. But the most important part is you have to subscribe on Instagram. That's how we're absolutely going to find out who you are. That's how we're going to reach out to you. But we're also going to validate against the podcast itself. So do us a favor. Subscribe.
Subscribe.
And if you can provide us proof that you subscribe somebody else and they're on Instagram too, maybe you'll get
something.
Like 1.17.
We're looking at you, Brooke.
So anyway, guys, we want to say thank you for joining us this week in the Wevio Exchange. We've got some really cool stuff coming up in content. We started with the Paradox Beer Company. We're going to follow with a bunch of other undisclosed beer companies.
Top secret.
So,
that being said, thanks for joining us on the Wevio Exchange this week. I'm Josh.
And I'm Joshua. Thank you for making us feel important. We love you and you're awesome. Carry on for 2020. We hope you survive to 2021. We love you, Wevio Exchange. Go look on Twitter and Instagram and on iTunes. We love you guys.
Go team.
Bye.
Later.